saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
I'm Dylan. And this week, we're talking about red cards in CDH, the best ones.
But before we do, if you want to support us directly and get cool extra perks, check us out on Patreon.
Yeah, red is one of those colors that I feel like is going to be a little bit different than the blue and the black versions of these podcasts, because although red does have some very powerful card, its card pool is a little bit, I don't want to say shallow, but like lean. Like it's got a big spike in power, and then everything else is like in the right deck with the right commander, maybe.
Yeah, the graph for this one is going to look so fucking askew.
The bell curve is way off.
Yeah, exactly. Red is really just like your win condition color. It's not the greatest of support colors unless you're using it to like get you a little bit of mana, but outside of the mana or like trying to find your explosive win condition, red's not really giving you a ton. So we're not going to see as long of a list as we saw with any of the other cards. In fact, there's already a couple cards on here that might even be a stretch for being in consideration of like the best cards in the format.
So, all right, yeah, let's get right into it. Let's talk about them.
All right, well, let's start off with a classic then. How does that sound?
I love that.
Let's start off with Lightning Bolt. We all know Lightning Bolt. It's a one red for a 3-damage instant spell.
That's a way to say what it does. Sure. We don't have to talk too much about Bolt. In other formats in the past, specifically, Lightning Bolt has been, I don't know, like the crux of the format, but just like the main focal point in a lot of ways of the format. In CDH, and especially in the year 2024, Lightning Bolt has lost a little bit of its favor. I don't even know if it's in the top 5 single target removal spells in our format. It's probably under that. It's a solid card. I'd probably give it like a 3.5 in CDH right now. It's going to see play in certain decks, but definitely not all decks.
I think 3.5 is actually a really good spot for it. Once I'm leaving my monocolor, my mono red and my two color red atmosphere, the only time that I really want to play it in 4+ colors is if I have a way to loop Eternal Witness with like a Meal and Dockside, and then that way I have a way to win the game without needing my commander as my infinite mana source. But if I'm not doing something like that, there are just so many better removal options, and this format isn't surrounded around the Bolt test the way that like Modern was, where like your really all-star creatures in Modern had to have 4 toughness, otherwise what was the point of them? They were just going to die to Bolt. That's why Tarmogoyf was so good at the time. But this format is a lot different. 3 toughness is kind of like okay for us to have because it still gets around Timna attacking. So it's not necessarily, as you said, running the format like it does others.
Yeah, and the damage to the face just doesn't matter. Like, yes, there's a theoretical world where someone will add Nahs down to 3 and you'll be able to get them, but that just doesn't happen very often. And like whittling your opponents down and eventually killing them with burn spells is just not very common in CDH. So it's really more often than not, like 99 out of 100 times, one red deal 3 damage to a creature. If you got to get rid of Dranith Magistrate, if you got to get rid of certain stacks pieces that die to it, it's a fine extra inclusion. But like you said, I do like that one loop of if you have a way to make infinite treasures with Dockside or a way to flicker something like Emil or Timur Sabertooth, and you have a way to draw your deck like Thrasios, you can Lightning Bolt someone's face, flicker the Eternal Witness, get the Lightning Bolt back, and just do it over and over again. So I like it as part of a convoluted part B, part C win condition, and then as a removal spell in like 2-color decks, but outside of that, not much. So yeah, 3.5 Lightning Bolt.
Removal spell in my non-blue color decks, right? Specifically, I should say, because I love it in Atali. Like you said, I need to get rid of Dranith Magistrate, but 3.5 I think is exactly where this goes. He's played in a decent amount of decks, but not enough to be considered like a massive staple that like Najeel is going
to
play.
Right, yeah. I would still say Swords to Plowshare is the premier removal spell that we have, and everything's kind of compared to that.
Every removal spell we've talked about in the past 3 weeks or 4 weeks now is just on a steady decline since Swords to Plowshares. All right, let's talk about Imperial Recruiter. This is 2 and a red for a human advisor, 1/1. When it enters the battlefield, you search your library for a creature card with power 2 or less, reveal it, and put it in your hand, and then shuffle.
It's a 5-mana Dockside Extortionist.
Yeah, which is a lot worse, but it's still like serviceable.
Yeah, in the right deck, if this can find a win condition as well as a value piece, if you can find Dockside Extortionist and Thassa's Oracle, and you're also not in black, because I think once you have all of the black tutors, this card is just not worth it. But if you're in a red greenish deck where you need to find sometimes Dockside Extortionist, sometimes Collector Oof, sometimes whatever, this can still be a great find.
It's also kind of a nice one card win condition. I know that Baron Master Wizard has kind of fallen out of the format a little bit, but that was a way that you could use Imperial Recruiter to find Baron, bounce it back to your hand, and then use the Recruiter to find Dockside and go infinite that way. But it can also be used to help you find Kiki Jiki lines. Kiki Jiki can copy the Imperial Recruiter and let you go find
Felidar Guardian
or Village Bellringer or whatever the fuck you want to go find.
So mana intensive is the issue with that line normally. You're paying 6-7 more than that, like 8-9 mana to pull off that combo.
Just for like the Kiki Jiki right there alone. So it does take a lot. That being said, it is a 3. Because there are going to be decks that I think are going to want it. Like, I do like it in Atali, or I did like it in Magda, because these were just, like, turbo Dockside Extortionist decks. I really want to just try to find a way to make as much mana as I possibly can. And a two-turn investment into a Dockside Extortionist isn't that bad in a deck that, like, that's your main plan and that's what you're wanting to do.
Yeah, I mean, it seems kind of straightforward, but you really, really have to need the things that this tutors for. Like, if your deck really heavily operates around Dockside Extortionist or around some other target that this card can get, obviously, the playability of it goes sky high, but the more colors you have, the more green and black tutors that you have, the less powerful this is, specifically the black tutors.
Yeah.
It just gets less and less powerful as you add more powerful cards, but still playable. Tutors are really good at helping the consistency of singleton decks. So, like you said, I think 3 sounds good. It's going to see in some two color decks.
I liked it better in like Jeskai decks too.
Yeah.
Because you don't really have a lot of good tutors in Jeskai colors. You have a lot of medium tutors. So, you're kind of like playing what you have to play. So, when this is a way that you can make infinite or help you make infinite mana for Jeskai, I think that's just a good spot to be.
Interesting that you were talking in the beginning how what red cards offers is like win conditions to decks, like that's what it's good at, is like comp win conditions basically, and the first two cards are yes a tutor and a removal spell but also a win condition or at least part of one, which
yeah, they can all kind of be a part of that too. Yeah, that's kind of funny. Let's talk about Dockside Extortionist, because we've already referenced this card in each of the other cards that we talked about so far. So this is one and a red for a goblin pirate that's a 1/2 and it enters the battlefield creating X treasure tokens where X is the number of artifacts and enchantments your opponents control.
It's the focal point of the format. I would say arguably the best card in the format by I don't know if a substantial margin, because there are obviously a lot of powerful cards, but I would say the format is very Dockside based right now.
It's way up there.
Yeah.
It's the reason why we're playing so many clones in the format right now, is just because everyone has one. It's a huge draw to this color, and it just goes infinite with the ham sandwich. It's so easy to make infinite mana with this thing.
And I will say it is important to keep this card in mind when you're playing CDH. I do think that sometimes it can be right to jam out all of your fast mana, even if you can't use it yet. Even with the Dockside in mind, that can be right sometimes, because we want to think about Rhystic Studies and less to a much lesser extent Wheel of Fortune. But there are times where you want to sandbag your stuff. You don't want to play any of your rocks so that you don't feed the potential Dockside, especially if you know for a fact that one's coming. We really have to like make sure that we can play around in our format, because if you can make Dockside worse, if you can make it so it's only getting 3 treasures, it can be much easier to deal with. But once Dockside's making 6-7, it's so much mana. It's just such a powerful card. It lets you come out of nowhere. It lets you really pull yourself out of situations that otherwise would have been impossible to pull out of. It's like the main draw to red, I would say.
You ever just think about like taking all artifacts out of your deck just to make Dockside bad and everyone else's?
I know. Yeah, it's such a strange situation, because like, yes, Dockside is a huge part of the format. It's only one card though, so like at the end of the day, like it's just better to make your deck better. It's better to play your own Dockside, play your own fast mana so you can find Dockside quicker than trying to stop your opponents, especially since we're in 3-player. Trying to metagame against what your opponents are doing is a little bit trickier, and I find it better to just like, how do I win the game? How do I take that most powerful card and use it to my advantage? And with Dockside, there's 1,001 ways to do it.
That's honestly the best way to take advantage of what your opponents are doing. It's like you're taking advantage of the fact that they're trying to ramp out their quick stuff, and then you go, I can just go on top of all of y'all with this thing.
Right, yeah.
It just opens up so many doors. You get so many windows that this thing does. Like, it's the reason why we're playing Imperial Recruiter at all.
Right, yeah, definitely. And the reason why we're playing Phantasmal Image, I would say. I honestly don't think Phimage would see play in nearly as many decks if Dockside wasn't around. I think Gilded Drake would be a much more powerful card, but the potential upside of being able to clone a Dockside rather than like Gilded Drake a Dockside, which does nothing, is just so huge. I feel like it's necessary to play the clones. So
this is a 5, right? Like,
easy
there's
five,
no
yeah.
world that Dockside is getting cut from a red deck.
Yeah, I truly don't think there's any deck that should not be playing Dockside, even if you're playing Collector Oof and all of the other artifact haters. Doesn't matter. You should still play Dockside so you can play those artifact hate pieces earlier.
After.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
You play them after you Dockside and already use your treasures for value.
Yeah,
so
it's It's just the upside's too high. It's too powerful of a card. I don't think there's any deck that should not play this if you're playing red.
Our next card is Jeskha's Will. This is 2 and a red for a sorcery that says choose one. If you control your commander, as you cast this spell, you may choose both. You can either add red mana to your mana pool for each card in target opponent's hand, or you can exile the top 3 cards of your library, and you can play them this turn, or both if you control the commander.
Jeskha's Will is such a high ceiling card also, super powerful. If your commander is 2 mana or less, sometimes even if it's 3 mana, it can be fine. And also, if you're planning on doing stormish things, I think you have to really want to be playing multiple spells in a turn and have like several ways to use that extra red mana. If you meet all of those requirements and if you check those boxes, Jeskha's Will is an incredible card.
It can be like one of the best cards in your deck. It is one of the best things you can do in Kraken and Sakashima.
Absolutely. That was the main one that I was going to bring up. Is in Kraken and Sakashima is effectively a win condition. You're going to make 40 mana and exile a top 10 cards of your deck. It's going to be insane. It's going to feel like a Mind's Desire in Kraken and Sakashima sometimes, which is a very powerful
card.
It
really is, yeah. I also really like it in the really expensive red commander decks that don't even care about getting both sides of it. Like, it's upside if you get both sides of it, but Godo only cares about the red mana side. Half the time, Atali only cares about the red mana side, so, like, it can be, like, the most busted seething song in the universe if it needs to be.
Yeah, I guess that's true. So not only do you have, like, you don't need to just have a cheap mana, like I said. I was recommending a 2-mana commander for this, which I do recommend, but also if you have, like, a 6 or 7-mana commander, I think it's also good there. Like you said, like, if it's just seething song and you can just pay 3 mana to then put your Atali into play, yes, that is excellent. But where I think this card is not quite as powerful, strangely enough, is in something like a mid-rangey blue farm list. Like, even though blue farm is a powerful deck and probably could use this spell effectively, and I'm sure there are blue farm pilots that do, more often than not, what you're doing with blue farm is mid-rangey stuff. You don't need to explode. You don't need to make 7 mana out of nowhere. I mean, sometimes on the breach turn, it probably would be nice, but this is least powerful in decks like those, and most powerful in decks like Rograk and Thrasios, and then Atali and stuff
exactly.
like that.
And Obnixilis, Captive Kingpin, can use this card a lot better than even like a Kenrith deck or something.
Right.
Because a lot of times, that red mana is like the last color you want.
Yes.
Like, if it made any other color almost, I would be much happier with that, because like all these other value commanders just need some other color to be able to actually like activate their ability or like cast any of the impactful spells they need to. Half of these decks that are playing red are only playing 3 or 4 cards, and if Jeskha's Will is one of them, like, it's just basically colorless mana you're giving yourself.
I'd probably give Jeskha's Will like a 4. It is a very powerful card in the right decks. It just doesn't see play in all of the decks, so it's a little bit lower than that. Maybe it's a 4.5. I don't know, 4.5.
Let's
what do you
split
think?
The difference and give it like a 4.25, somewhere in the middle of 4.5 and a 4, because I think that its power level in the decks that it is really good in, like, it's enough to kind of skyrocket this above the 4 level. Like, it's just super impactful. I love even, like, when there's a Mystic Remora in play, you target the Mystic Remora player and then, like, oh, I'm feeding them extra cards, but, like, I'm going to get to use that extra mana because I have Defense Grid or, like, a Silence that was on the stack and it doesn't even matter anymore.
Yeah, that's a great point. It being particularly good into Rhystic Study, Mystic Remora type of things, just because you make so much red mana, and then that can help you pay for the rest of your Rhystic Study triggers if you're going off on like a stormish turn. Do you know what I mean? You just pay them that one, and then you make 15 mana, and then, all right, Underworld Breach, I'll pay for the Rhystic Study. Everything that you cast, you can pay for that Rhystic Study now.
Yeah, so I kind of like 4.25 for Jeskha's Will.
Lock it in.
Let's get another really insanely powerful one over with then, shall we? Underworld Breach is one and a red enchantment that says each non-land card in your graveyard has escape. The escape cost is equal to the card's mana value plus exiling 3 other cards from your graveyard. At the beginning of the end step, sacrifice Underworld Breach.
Yep, this is another one that is a core focal point of win conditions in our format. All of the cards so far have been potentially part of win conditions, right? Every single one of those cards, which is kind of interesting. We don't have to spend too much time on Breach, strongest card in the format. We just said Dockside was. Breach is probably right there with it tied. With Brain Freeze, Lion's Eye Diamond, you can mill all of your opponents out, mill yourself out, and cast Thassa's Oracle. There's 100 different ways to abuse Underworld Breach. Sometimes it's just regrowth. More often than not, it's win the game. It's a very powerful card, and I think one of the main reasons why some of our counterspells and removal spells have shifted more toward being enchantment-focused. Swansong is obviously a very powerful card, but in our format, it's even more powerful because it can counter Underworld Breach and stuff like that. There's not much more to say about that. It's a 5 out of 5. It's incredible.
It is the second best win condition in the format, in my opinion, just underneath Thassa's Oracle Demonic Consultation.
And it's part of that win condition. It can mill so that you can cast the Thassa's Oracle.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah, so. And you only need to be in the blue blue-red color combination for Underworld Breach to be busted. And even then, you don't even have to, because you can just play Grinding Station, and as long as you have enough cards in your graveyard, that will allow you to, you know, kind of be its own brain freeze and get through the rest of your library so that you can set up your dual caster mage combo then, I guess.
And Intuition is also a card that we probably should bring up alongside Underworld Breach, because Intuition being able to find Savine's Reclamation, Underworld Breach, and Lion's Eye Diamond can allow you to set up that win with only as few as like 6 to 9 cards in your graveyard if you have enough mana. It's a very main point of our format. It's like, it is the metagame, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. It's the card that single-handedly pushed Yawgmoth's Will basically out of the format.
It's the reason why we're playing Sans green decks instead of Sans red decks. For a while, Thrasios Timna was like the deck of decks. It was the best cards in the format, but now that Dockside and Underworld Breach exist, Timna and Crom is the best deck in the format, and I really do think Dockside and Underworld Breach are like the sole reason why that is. I think if those cards didn't exist, we would also be playing Thrasios Timna.
Yeah, especially because like green doesn't really add anything to what you want to be doing with Underworld Breach, so it makes sense that you would move away from that color and keep in white. That gives you more of the protection, especially now.
With Savine's Reclamation, and then, yeah, Silence, Grand Abolisher,
Ranger Captain, and shit like
they're
that.
They're really good into that Underworld Breach, because your Underworld Breach win, it's difficult to, if it gets stopped, if it gets destroyed, if you get your graveyard exiled in response to it, you have to exile at the end of turn, so you can whiff pretty easily, so those white protection spells are extra careful.
Exactly.
Helpful.
Now, initially, I want to give this card a 5, just because, like, we gave Thassa's Oracle a 5, but I know we were kind of talking a little bit before the podcast that, like, maybe this can't be a 5, because if you think about, like, all of the Kiki Jiki Survival of the Fittest based, like, Naya decks, they're not running Underworld Breach. I mean, I'm not running it in a tally, but I think that's wrong. I feel like I kind of actually want it in a tally. But there's actually a decent amount of red decks that are slower that don't want Underworld Breach. Thrasios Bruise, even, like Dawnwaker decks, weren't playing Underworld Breach as part of their 4-card red card package.
Yeah, I guess maybe there's a world where we give it a 4.9, and maybe Thassa's Oracle deserved a 4.9 for the same reason that it doesn't actually go in every single deck, but it still is arguably one of, if not the most strong thing to do. It's just specific. You have to be playing a certain type of deck. You have to be playing kind of, I don't want to say bad cards, but like cards that you wouldn't otherwise play, like Lion's Eye Diamond. Like, yes, you can use Lion's Eye Diamond to work with your other Storm cards, which is what you want to be doing if you're an Underworld Breach. But if you have Lion's Eye Diamond in your mid-range deck, it's not going to be good. You want to build up cards in your hand. You don't want to discard them for a burst of mana. I don't know. It's kind of hard. I think not giving Underworld Breach a 5 out of 5 would be like it would be
a cardinal sin.
Yeah, I think we should talk about what we rate a 5 out of 5. I think a 5 out of 5 could either be it goes in every deck, or it's the most powerful thing to be doing in the color.
Or like a quintessential CEDH piece, I would say too, because we also gave like Ad Nauseam a 5, and that's clearly not a card that every black deck plays.
Right.
So I do think that Underworld Breach is going to be a 5 out of 5, but I am going to put it underneath Dockside Extortionist.
Oh yeah. Dockside goes in every single deck.
And this card definitely does not.
Yeah. Dockside, you don't need anything else. You just need 3 opponents, which every commander deck has, and you will make at least probably 3 treasures most of the time, which is fine enough. And
exactly.
Then 4 is incredible. I would say 4 is good. 5 is starting to get too incredible, and then 6 is insane. Everything above that's insane.
I think 5 is really where Dockside starts to get unlocked, because that's where like a lot of your infinite mana loops start to become relevant too. So yeah. All right. I like that. 5 for Breach.
It's a 5, but technically a smaller 5 than Dockside Extortionist.
I'm a little hiccupy.
Yeah.
And now I have to read a card with 2 sides, so this timing's very well. Burgi, God of Storytelling. This is 2 and a red. For a legendary creature god, it's a 3-3. Whenever you cast a spell, you add red, and until the end of turn, you don't lose this mana as steps and phases end. Creatures you control can boast twice. Oh, shut up, Cameron. Let's read the other side of it. Harnfell, Horn of Bounty. Legendary artifact. It's 4 and a red that says discard a card and exile the top 2 cards of your library. You may play those cards this turn.
This is another powerful one that can be part of win conditions, funny enough.
It is everything that you want it to be in a Grixis deck. It is the mana that you need it to be to storm off, or it is the extra card advantage and reach that you need to find more things and get rid of the duds in your hand.
Absolutely. Like the fact that when you Ad Nauseam and you have 30 cards in your hand, sometimes 10 of them are lands. If you can turn 5 mana and turn those 5 lands into a whole bunch more spells in action.
10 more cards. That's 10 more cards you get to look at.
And the fact that you're discarding those cards, not exiling them, meaning that you can escape with Underworld Breach, you can still utilize them afterwards.
It's so good.
Yeah, the only issue this card has is it is a little expensive. 3 mana for a mana engine is a little bit much, and then 5 mana for card advantage is a little bit much. But in these Storm decks that sometimes they Jeskha's Will, or they just happen to have like extra mana and need something to do with it, Burgi is incredible.
A lot of times, like, Burgi's your turn to play when you're like, okay, well, the table's not, like, really threatening right now. I can kind of take a turn off to throw Burgi out, and I will be really set up for the rest of the game then.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it's also really helpful in your finishing turn. If, like I said, you can make that bunch of mana. But this is another one there, like Underworld Breach. If you're not playing that fast kind of explosive strategy, it's much less good. I'm not going to play it in Timnatana, Blood Pod. I'm not going to play it in any sort of like Thrasios deck that's trying to grind value and advantage. I mean, Thrasios Dargo might play this because this card is very good with Dargo.
You got to play this in every Dargo deck.
Yeah, every Dargo deck, because it allows you, it gives you that red mana back to recast Dargo if you get enough sacrifices. It's an incredible combo piece with a lot of commanders that we're probably not going to be able to touch on most of them, but the card's good, just doesn't see play in every deck.
Exactly. I mean, like you said, the main problem is that it is a little expensive for each side, but it's kind of like a Kaldigan's Command because right, it can do everything that you want it to
do. It does everything that you want at a slightly bad rate, and that makes it good enough. It makes mana, it makes cards. That's all you want your shit to do. It was one of those two things. Yeah, that's how you win the game.
So what do we give this card, though? Because, like, it's more than a three. I think it's going to be more than a three.
I think it's close to Jeskha's Will in power
level. We think it's
close.
It's a four, then. It's at least
a four. It's definitely a four. Is it a 4.2 or a 4.3? Let me try to think of this as better than Jeskha's Will.
So I actually...
Yes?
I actually think the popularity of Burgundy is going down a little bit.
Yeah. I don't know if that's right, but yeah, I think you're probably... I think you are correct in saying that the popularity of this card has been going down.
But if that's not correct, we should rate it based on what's correct. But I think as the format slows down a little bit, like, because its value side, the card advantage side of it is significantly worse than Rhystic Study and, like, pretty much every other card advantage engine, actual engine that we would talk about in our ranking the best card engines podcast, like, this backside of Burgi doesn't come up, and it's significantly a front side much more.
Yes, yeah, you're right. The backside is so powerful. I truly think, I mean, I know at least I'm this way sometimes, I'll straight up just forget about the backside. You know what I mean? It's just, to me, it's just
it's
the front side.
Because
the front side's so good, I forget that the backside, oh yeah, that's extra cards. I should have used that.
And it will win you games. Like,
absolutely.
Just seeing 10 extra cards will win you the game. Yeah. But, like, not being able to actually draw those cards, like, you're not drawing them, you have to use them then. So if you have an unlucky set of flips and you go, oh shit, well, there's my Twin Flame and my Dual Caster Mage is still in my deck, and now I'm never going to be able to use this combo as a way to win the game.
I mean, it's the same as Jeskha's Will. Sometimes it happens where you flip over a card of Jeskha's Will that you weren't ready to see, and you go, fuck, now that's exiled and I can't actually do anything with it. Like,
yeah, that's
it's
true.
It's remarkably close. The only reason why at first I rated it slightly higher than Jeskha's Will is, like you said, you can just jam this on turn one or two off of a Mana Crypt or something, and it's at least a 3-3 blocker. It's going to stop the Timna beats. It's going to at least buy you maybe a turn or two.
Funnily enough, it's
Jeskha's
always the
that.
Biggest thing in play.
It's
when
big.
You play it.
3-3s are big. It's big in the metagame. So the fact that you can jam this when you have nothing going on, whereas Jeskha's Will, you can't really just jam it. You know what I mean? You have to have something to do with that mana. You have to have some kind of a game plan. You have to have already built up some resources, whereas Burgi, that's not always the case.
I didn't think we would get it to this point in this podcast, but I think that Burgi might actually be a little bit better than Jeskha's Will.
I
but
think
like
4.3.
Yeah. So it's literally 0.05 points ahead of Jeskha's Will, because for three mana they're doing the same thing. It's just your investment is different. Like, Burgi is your 401k. You're putting mana into it right away so that later when you need it, you're getting that mana back.
Whereas Jeskha's was like a lottery ticket.
It's like a lottery ticket. That's, oh my god, we're so good at analogies, dude.
Maybe like insider stock trading. Like, you have an idea it's gonna be good and swell, but you don't actually know for
like
sure.
Like day trading. You can get lucky and make it really good, but it's really not the most reliable way to make your mana.
Yeah, but if you have a ton of money already, if you're already going through it,
oh, it's just fucking fun.
It doesn't matter, you know what I mean? It's just like extra. It's kind of, I view it the same way, I think.
This is another episode of two guys who don't know what they're talking about.
This is stocks, right? Yeah, stocks. Jeskha's Will is stocks.
Let's talk about a card that can lose you the game and win you the game. Final Fortune is 2 red for an instant that says take an extra turn after this one, but at the end of that turn, you lose the game.
It's an instant. Did you say that?
I did say it's an instant.
Very important part of this card.
It is, because the other two that do the same effect that are sorcery speed, we're not even talking about today, because that's how frequently less they're played versus Final Fortune.
Yeah, Final Fortune being able to be paired with Necropotence after you pay all that life, you can go to your end step, you have a moment where all those cards are in your hand before you go to discard. If you have enough mana to Final Fortune right then, you can sculpt a perfect 7 and go right to your next turn. Your opponents don't have a chance to do anything, and hopefully you can win the game there. That's this card's main purpose. It can also be helpful to sneak in a turn in between two other players. You pass the turn because you think everyone's holding up blue, because the blue player behind you was the one that's doing it. They tap out on their end step. You sneak in an extra turn before the other player untaps and goes through their win, and perhaps you can get a win in there.
I've never been able to get that to work.
No, but that's the dream. That's the whole situation. That's what you're hoping for,
the
right?
The fact that you can do it. Like, the fact that this card creates windows where windows shouldn't be. It's just smashing holes in your walls all the time. It opens up so many more... That's the same thing I was just saying. It just gives you more flexibility that, like, so many other cards won't give you.
And this can also act as just, like, a ritual sometimes. You know what I mean? If you have enough mana where you can just, like, use this to untap your lands and untap some of your mana rocks and just act as almost like a dramatic reversal of just, like, giving you more mana, that's also great, too. The other red time walks that are sorcery speed also do that, which is why decks like Rog'Sai and some very turbo decks will play those cards, because you just need that one extra turn. You just need a little bit more mana to get there.
How many times have you heard a CEDH player say, if I just untapped on my next turn, I totally would have won this game.
Yeah, exactly.
This card allows you to take advantage of those situations.
It's got some weaknesses. I mean, if you Final Fortune and everyone says, okay, and then they silence you in your upkeep, you're going to be pissed, especially if you're in your Arachdos deck, which is where this card will see the most play because...
You don't have interaction for that.
Right, yeah, you don't have interaction for that, so...
There's still scenarios where this is actually stabbing you instead of getting rid of, like, your opponents.
Exactly.
So it's one of these cards where, like, I'm hesitant to put in decks because I notoriously hate cards that have a downside for me and have a situation where my opponents can set it up so that I lose the game because of a spell that I cast. I hate that feeling. I don't like those cards. However, it is impossible to deny that the upside that Final Fortune has just still allows it to be worth that chance, right? Like, you run enough other cards in your deck that you can take those risks. You play blue so that you can counter the silence when they upkeep it on you, right? Like, if you can set up scenarios where this is going to be timed well, this is going to be your favorite card.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. But it doesn't go in every deck. I think it doesn't go in a lot of decks. I've seen recently there is, like, a push. There's two different camps. I've seen this card see more play, and even in things like Najeela as, like, a backup way to get an extra attack. Also, Najeela is kind of a storm deck. Maybe it should see a little bit more play in those type of decks. I don't really know. I think it's like a 3-5.
I was
maybe a 3.
Give it a 4. Okay. Yeah, just because there are more and more decks that are wanting it. I think that the increasing popularity of Necropotence, now that Born Upon the Wind is also in the format, gives Grixis decks, like, another good way that's not Peer into the Abyss to be winning the game off of drawing a huge portion of your deck. And I think that these kind of investments into Necropotence, Final Fortune, and Born Upon a Wind are paying off a lot more than they used to, when it was like Shimmermere Necropotence instead.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's just an easier way to win. It works well with a lot of powerful cards. Yeah, I think... I don't know about 4, though. What do we have at 3.5 right now?
I have Lightning Bolt at 3.5. It's stronger than Lightning Bolt and does, like, things for you that Lightning Bolt can't do.
Maybe 3.7.
Then. Less replaceable than Lightning Bolt, I think, too. I'm fine giving it a 3.7.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's stay on the fortune theme and talk about Wheel of Fortune.
Wheel of Fortune.
2 and a red for a sorcery that says each player discards their hand and draws 7 cards.
Yeah, Wheel of Fortune is a classic powerhouse of Magic the Gathering. This is another one that we don't have to spend a ton of time on, but it's great with Underworld Breach. It's great at refilling your hand once you've dumped it all out. The bad part in multiplayer is you have 3 opponents, not just 1. So you're really doling out 21 cards to your 7, so the rate really isn't quite there. Even if you empty your hand and fill up from 0 to 7, your opponents are still going up on cards too. It's more helpful if you have protection alongside of it, if you play the Silence first and then Wheel. It's more helpful if you know your opponents don't have anything.
If you have a Narset Parter of Ales in play, it's more helpful, right? Like, there's synergy pieces that work very well with this, but we've talked a lot about Wheels on the channel. You know, you can't just kind of blindly, willy-nilly throw them out there.
I think Wheel is great if you're turn one on the play or maybe second in turn order and the other players of the deck haven't mulliganed super low and you can give them kind of maybe a questionable 7. The issue is a lot of CDH players mulligan kind of aggressively. So if they go down to 3 and then you bring them up to 7, that can be really bad, especially if they went before you in turn order. Like, if they get to untap with their mana before you get to, that can be really bad. Even still, it can be good to mess up your opponents then. And then it can also be good in your combo turn later on if you combo with a Narset or a Notion Thief or even with just Underworld Breach and just get to go through your entire deck. It can be good there. I don't love it as much as I did once in the past. I'll
tell
you that.
Me too. I really only like it in Underworld Breach decks now, or decks that are trying to cast a ton of spells in one turn. And that is becoming less and less good as the format slowed down to include like Atraxa and Tivit as main powerhouses in the format now. So I'm also way down on Wheel. I'm thinking it's probably going to be like around Lightning Bolt or Imperial Recruiter, around like the threes right now too.
I kind of, in a weird way, think it's closer to Jessica's Wheel, but I see what you're saying.
This card rots in my hand half the time because a lot of times I'm evaluating the board state and realizing that it is not the right time to Wheel, whether it's because there are other blue players at the table. Like, that's the other thing. You mentioned you have to have protection, and you kind of do, because you are refueling everyone else, giving them the opportunity, three other players the opportunity to find potentially free counter magic for what you're doing. Like, you don't even feel safe when people are tapped out and you Wheel.
Yeah, you have to be a certain type of deck for sure. You got to be a fast deck. You got to be confident that your deck can win off of a fresh seven with what you already have in play. If you think, doesn't matter if my opponents have 21 cards, they only have one blue pip up, I already have out some sort of protection, you know what I mean, a permanent that's stopping my opponents from doing something, or you just like have enough going on, maybe you've already cast the Underworld Breach, or you're already in the middle of your combo, I think it can be fine to kind of just like hope to go for it. But yeah, I see what you're saying. What do we just give a 3.7 to?
Yeah, is it better than Final Fortune?
I think it's better than Final Fortune.
Probably, right? It doesn't say lose the game on
it. Yeah, they both can rot in your hand, but they both can win you the game. So I would say like a 3.9, I want to say.
All right, I'll give it a 3.9. I'm into that. What are we talking about next?
I feel like we're almost done with the cards. There's a couple left.
There's, how many are left? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6, technically 7 cards, but 2 of them we're going to talk about at the same time. Let's move into the mana section of the podcast. This is another good reason to be in red. We already talked about Dockside Extortionist, but Rite of Flame is pretty good too, I think.
Rite of Flame's close.
Yeah, I mean, it's one mana red sorcery that adds 2 red mana to your mana pool, and then you add 1 red to your mana pool for each card named Rite of Flame in each graveyard.
Have you ever gotten that off an opponent's graveyard?
No, I tweeted about this like 2 years ago, and really? I still haven't gotten it.
It's never been a dark ritual for me. Rite of Flame's okay. If you need to cast Underworld Breach or Dockside Extortionist off of 1 red mana after your ad nauseum, that's the sweet spot for this card. I want to ad nause, I want to leave 1 red open, and hopefully I find Rite of Flame so that I can Rite of Flame into Dockside and go from there, or Rite of Flame into Underworld Breach and go from there. It's really helpful in those specific situations. Outside of that, I don't know.
I think that this card is like a Lotus Petal. This is another red Lotus Petal, basically, and I'm not cutting Lotus Petal in any deck that's not playing Collector Oof.
Yeah.
So I kind of have always liked Rite of Flame in my red decks.
But I think you have to be playing one of or both of those cards that I just mentioned. And you will be, since you're playing red, you're probably playing those anyway.
That you have a good point, because in Thrasios Bruise, you were not playing Underworld Breach and you did not need Rite of Flame. Like, there are decks that want more permanent based mana sources.
Yeah, I think not being able to store the mana, like what Lotus Petal can do, where you can get it out early and then use it later, that makes it obviously a little bit worse.
But maybe that's a trade off though too, because we were talking about how maybe you don't want to just jam out artifacts because of other Dockside too. So, like, it has that upside, but it also has the downside of, like, you can't get it ahead of a Rhystic Study or Mystic Remora. Like, it's always going to feed that card too.
I evaluate this card pretty close to, like, Imperial Recruiter, honestly. It's somewhere around 3.1 or 2, something like that.
I'll give it a 3.1. It'll slightly edge out Imperial Recruiter, but this card, there's a lot of times too where you're like, man, if I only had 1 more mana, I'll be good.
Final Fortune and the extra turn red spells are another good reason to want to play Rite of Flame, because this can easily help cast them, stuff like that. You want to use that double red mana. You want to use that 2 red pips for this one to be good.
Yeah, so if you're a little bit heavier red, this one's going to be great too. Simeon Spirit Guide is next. This is 2 and a red for an Ape Spirit 2/2. That's all irrelevant because it just says exile it from your hand to make a red mana.
This one is closer to Lotus Petal, I think, and a very powerful card.
This is even better than Lotus Petal half the time.
Yeah. It doesn't get shut off by Collector Oof or get turned in sideways by Manglehorn or anything like that.
Or feed anything in play either too. It's just an absolutely free effect that you have.
Yeah, I don't play it in Blood Pod currently because I don't have a ton of ways to use that red mana. I think that might be wrong-ish.
It's more of an explosive card. Yeah. Like, if you're not trying to do a ton in one turn, then I understand why you don't want it. Because it is a card.
Yeah.
Like, it is a full card for something like this. And if you're worried about losing that advantage and not being able to make it up, I can totally understand why you don't want something like this.
I dance back and forth on that because, like, individual high card quality can be something that's really powerful for mid-range and slower control. controlling decks. You just want each of your cards to represent a lot of stuff. And Simeon Spirit Guide representing just mana is kind of putting you down cards in order to play your things.
Especially if something happens to your thing that you use the mana on.
Yeah, but I'm starting to wonder with like decks like Timna, where like if I can Simeon Spirit Guide into an early Timna and gain the card advantage back, maybe that's still okay. Maybe I just want to be getting on the board faster. So I go back and forth between like my 60 card mindset of just like Simeon Spirit Guide does not belong in mid-range decks to my commander mindset of just like anything I can do to get faster is better because my engines will claw me back into the game. So as long as I can get the engines in play quicker, it doesn't matter. I'll gain that advantage back. I go back and forth on these mindsets. I'm not sure.
I feel that because this is a time where like I feel like if you won it for turn one Timna, it's unfortunate that this is the color of mana that it makes. And there's so many other things. Like, this doesn't help you cast Esper Sentinel. It's a great thing when I want to be trying to add Nauseam and really power out like super big Italis and stuff like that. But anytime, again, I want a more permanent based mana in like a Thrasios deck or something like that, I'm not interested in Simeon Spirit Guide.
Yeah, I do think Elvish Spirit Guide is a little bit better. Is that even right?
Hard disagree because
yeah,
the decks that are in green typically more permanent based ways to make mana more reusable ways to make mana as opposed to that quick little burst.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Simeon Spirit Guide is better. I'm just trying to figure out because like it being red mana is a downside because the red mana sometimes is not helpful. You know what I mean? You need it to be blue mana. Can you imagine if there was a blue Simeon Spirit Guide? It would be incredible.
It would be nuts.
So you need
to be like your second black or like, oh, I need to beseech the mirror. This needs to be my third black source.
Yeah. Yes, it would be better if it were blue and black, obviously. But Simeon Spirit Guide is still very powerful. Better than Rite of Flame for sure.
Better than Rite of Flame for sure. Better than Lightning Bolt?
Absolutely. Yeah.
What about Final Fortune?
Better than Final Fortune, I think.
Better than Wheel of Fortune?
What's next after Wheel of Fortune?
Jessica's Wheel.
It's lower than that.
Okay.
So I would say I think it's between Wheel of Fortune and Jessica's Wheel, though.
What if we just give it a 4?
I think it's a 4.
It's a straight up 4.
It's a 4. It's very powerful in the right deck, not in every deck, but in a lot of decks. And more decks than you would think, I would say. It doesn't have to be a turbo deck.
I definitely agree with
Whereas,
that.
Whereas, I feel Rite of Flame does for some reason, just because Rite of Flame's a spell, so you're more committed. It not being a spell is also very helpful.
Like, Rite of Flame works well because you can use it with your Underworld Breach. Like, this ape won't let you help escape cards with your Underworld Breach later, right? Like, it's exiling itself. So I can see situations where they're, like, both better than the other one, but the decks that want the one probably want the other. Like, you probably don't go home without either of them sleeving up one.
I think if you're playing Rite of Flame, you're definitely playing Simeon Spirit Guide, but if you're playing Simeon Spirit Guide, you're not necessarily playing Rite of Flame.
Okay, I think that's fair.
Right?
I think that's fair. I think those are probably smaller windows.
Absolutely.
Smaller.
But I would cut Rite of Flame before Simeon Spirit Guide, just because 0-1 is better than 1-2.
Absolutely correct. Yeah, absolutely correct. When you don't need a springboard into it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But their Venn diagrams are
still
almost 4, one
powerful card, played a lot.
Cool.
Moving on.
Ragavan Nimble Pilferer is 1 red for a legendary creature monkey pirate. It's a 2/1, and when it deals combat damage to a player, you create a treasure token and exile the top card of that player's library. Until end of turn, you can cast that card, and it also has dash for 1 and a red.
This card is much more powerful in 60 card than it is in our format, but I think it's still a great card in our format.
In decks that don't have actual card advantage in the command zone, I will pretend like this is a value engine. It's like my red Esper Sentinel, technically, but it's not that at all because you're not getting cards that you want actively. You're getting cards that you might want and probably can't do anything with if they're a land.
Yeah, more often than not, you're going to flip a land or a counterspell, which at that point is not going to do a ton. Sometimes you hit a Mana Crypt and it's the best day ever, but more often than not, I would say you hit duds off of the Ragavan. It's really just a 2/1 that can help with your Timna and can get you a treasure and will be a very large Orcish Bowmaster Magnet, unfortunately. That one toughness stinks now more than ever, especially needing to attack. It's a little harder to get through, so it's slightly worse than a Mana Dork in some ways, slightly better than a Mana Dork in other ways. Card's great. I think it's better than Simeon Spirit Guide, probably like a 4.2.
So that would put it just under Jessica's Will.
What's Jessica's Will at?
4.25.
And then what's right after that?
4.3, Burgi.
Better than Burgi.
You think this is better than Burgi?
And maybe Jessica's Will, because I think Ragavan goes in turbo decks and slow decks. I think Ragavan goes in most decks, to be
Ragavan
honest.
Does go in turbo decks, but I see it less in slower decks, though. Like, Thrasios doesn't play Ragavan,
typically. Is that true? Yeah.
Like, it works well with Timna. Like, it would work better in blue farm because you can get the Timna triggers, but if you're not playing Timna, like, then it starts to get a little bit worse. Because it does get really hard to get in with your Ragavan at a certain point in the game. Like, it gets really, really good in the early game, but then you're finding it a lot harder to get in after people start to play, like, their 1/4s and shit.
I guess it kind of depends on your pod a lot. There's normally one player at the pod that's open a lot of the times, but I see what you mean. It does get, yeah, as the board gets clogged up, this card does get worse and worse. It's got to connect. It can't do anything if it can't connect, which Birds of Paradise can always do something.
Yeah. If anyone's playing Forbidden Orchard, this card stinks.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not even like just Orcish Bowmaster that makes this card a little bit worse than it was pre-Bowmaster. Like, there's other things that people are doing that are actively hurting your Ragavan from getting in.
I think I have recently taken out the Collector Oofs and put in the Ragavans in my Blood Pod list. So in both of my red decks, I'm playing Ragavan, and it has been great for me, so I'm a little jaded right now. But I still do think it's better than Birgi.
I think Birgi just does so much more. Like, the card advantage in Birgi is actually going to get you a lot farther ahead than Ragavan will. Like, a lot of times Ragavan is only making treasures, where Birgi can just have so much more.
Birgi's a win, part of a win condition. Ragavan, yeah. Is Ragavan the first card that's not part of a win condition? No, I'm sure there was another one.
Oh, boy. Technically, all the other cards
are technically part of a win condition. Even
is
Final Fortune.
Is Rite of Flame part of a win condition?
I guess Rite of Flame's
though?
Not. Yeah. Rite of Flame and Simian Spirit Guide aren't. They're not part
like
of a win
condition. The ceiling of Ragavan, like flipping over the One Ring. Like, that's a really high ceiling, but that's like 1 in 85 cards that are in your opponent's deck and could even be in their hand. So it's an unreliable way to get advantage outside of just getting treasures. And even then, it's not very reliable past that certain point. So
the ceiling is, well, the ceiling is high, but a little bit lower than Birgi and Jessica's will. So maybe it's like a 4.1.
I'm thinking that I'll give it to you that we can put it ahead of Simian Spirit Guide, but I think 4.1 is a better home for it. Whereas I think Jessica's Will and Birgi can just do a little bit more at almost all points of the game versus what Ragavan can do.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, sure.
All right, we'll put that at 4.1. All right, let's talk about Gamble. This is one red for sorcery that says search your library for a card and put that card into your hand and then discard a card at random, then shuffle.
Red doesn't have a lot of access to tutors. We already talked about the other good one, Imperial Recruiter. Gamble is
the
better.
The other good one.
Yeah, there's only two, and Imperial Recruiter's not so great. Gamble is much better in Underworld Breach decks. Once the Underworld Breach is out, it doesn't matter if you discard or not. That's a one mana tutor, so that's incredible. Best rate possible. Without the Underworld Breach, Gamble's a little bit worse.
Again, the ceiling for this card is way high, but the floor is way like towards the maximum.
Yeah.
The maximum depth,
maximum
of,
depth
floor.
Of floor.
Yeah. Whatever that number is.
It can be very appealing to turn one Gamble for Mana Crypt. And then if you keep the Mana Crypt, you can hopefully Mana Crypt into Talisman or Mana Crypt into Rhystic Study with another pip or something like that. The ceiling can be high for that. A lot of times this is going to be referred to as the red Entomb, because this is just going to take a card from your library and you're going to fucking discard exactly that card or the payoff that the Mana Crypt was going to go into or something like that. The odds often aren't super great, especially once you have to pad to play a couple of cards first. Once you're down to 4 or 3 cards, Gamble starts getting real bad.
What's the threshold for you that when you go like, oh, I can't gamble at this point anymore?
Depends on the game state. I don't know. Like in the dark on turn one where I'm like gambling for Mana Crypt, I don't think I would do it if the gamble revealed 4 cards, but I would for 5. Like if I gambled and then it was 1 out of 5, I would do that gamble for a Mana Crypt.
So that's
20%
that
I'll discard it.
That has to be turn one in that case. Yeah. Then. To do this turn one, you have to go land gamble. That puts you down to 6. Oh, I guess the card that you get is a gamble card. So you on turn one, you still have 7 cards in your hand when
you
go to discard.
Turn one, you'll go to 8 cards when you draw, and then you'll go land gamble down to 6.
But then you put the card you gamble for in your hand.
Yeah.
So that counts as one. So you have 7 cards that.
That's a great one. I would definitely do that. I would do it if it was 6, and I would do it if it was 5.
See, I'm at the point now where like if my 25% chance with 4 cards in my hand, I also feel
you
okay
would take
with
that.
That.
I wouldn't take that. It depends. Maybe I would.
I started going by like Fire Emblem rules, where like if I would take this percent chance in Fire Emblem, I should take this percent chance in Gamble.
It depends on what the other cards are. Like if you need it specifically to not hit 2 cards,
ooh,
then that's even worse.
Well,
you know
that's
what I mean?
A 50% chance,
right?
Then,
yeah.
If
so
you have 4 cards.
It depends on like if one of the other cards is necessary, you take that out of the equation and then think, what if I odds I discard that card? And I'm sure there are some equations that you could figure out that would help you like better solve this. I'm just going off gut reaction a lot of the time. Gamble is the one where I love it late game. I love it when after I ad nauseum and I have 30 cards in my hand, whatever. Yeah,
that's
1 out of 30.
Perfect.
That's
yeah.
a great gamble. That's incredible. And I love it in the beginning when I haven't mulliganed and I want to make sure I get that mana crypt, that can be fine. In the mid game is when this card starts to really suck.
Is when this gets a little bit iffy. Like if you haven't had a card advantage engine that's been in the game yet, so you end up like getting stuck at three pretty much. And when you're at the 33%, I'm a little iffy on just using it then.
I still think that this is somewhere around Rite of Flame power, where if you're playing Underworld Breach and Ad Nauseam, Gamble's great. If you're not playing those cards, Gamble's much worse. So I would rate it probably around a 4 or 4.1, somewhere in that ballpark.
All right, that's a little bit closer to Simeon Spirit Guide Ragavan up there.
Isn't Rite of Flame a 4?
Rite of Flame's a 3.1 we gave it.
3.1? 3.1. Where the fuck was I? Okay.
Dude, you blacked out for it.
what did we give a 4? Ragavan was a 4?
Simeon Spirit Guide is a 4. Ragavan's a 4.1.
And we gave Rite of Flame a 3.1?
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. I think Gamble is somewhere around Rite of Flame, so...
All right, so it's going to be down. See, I don't know.
What's higher than Rite of Flame?
Lightning Bolt's higher than Rite of Flame.
I guess it's better than that.
I think it's better than Lightning Bolt. I think it might even be better than Final Fortune, which we have at a 3.7.
Yeah, it's very close to those cards.
Maybe I think this card is better than it actually is. Maybe you're right. Maybe now that I'm thinking about it, maybe this should be down at like 3.1 or 3.2 or something like that. Like, I think it is better than Rite of Flame.
It's so hard to actually like rate these things. Based on so many things, it's hard to evaluate, but...
This is another one of those cards that like has a downside. That like, you could be spending one mana to put two of your best cards in your graveyard.
Yeah.
Like, that could be something that you're actively doing when you cast this. So.
Realistically, I think probably Simeon Spirit Guide and Rite of Flame should be closer. Looking back now, Rite of Flame should be better than what I gave it. It should probably be close to like a 3.4 or something, because it's closer to Lightning Bolt than it is to other stuff.
Well, that honestly wouldn't change it anywhere on the list. Okay, like, it would change it from 3.1 to 3.4. Yeah, it doesn't actually move it. Yeah.
What do you give Gamble? I'm going to lock in at like a 3.6. I think it's a little bit better than Lightning Bolt.
You know what? I'm sick of talking about Gamble, so I'm just going to go with a 3.6, and it's got its own little spot.
Playing Breach and Ad Nauseam, play Gamble. Otherwise, question it.
Cool. We're going to talk about Red Elemental Blast and Pyroblast next. So they are both one mana instants that let you either counter a blue spell or destroy a blue permanent.
Yeah, I always forget the difference. I think Pyroblast, you can target anything, and it just won't do it, and then Red Elemental Blast has to be the target?
Correct. Yeah, so Pyroblast specifically says counter target spell if it's blue.
So
if you go to change the target of Pyroblast, you can have it target whatever you want. It just might not destroy or counter the thing because it's not blue.
Which is helpful with Deflecting Swipe.
What I've started to do more recently now is if I'm only playing one of these effects, I'm only playing Red Elemental Blast because it makes it tougher. They have to target something else that's blue so that way, especially if I'm playing a red-green deck, they have to hit someone else's piece if they want to interact with my spell, and it can't be something that like is hurting me actively. It's still getting rid of someone else's card.
I think for a while Pyroblast was the favorite just because it could add to your storm count for no reason if you needed to. Now that's much less relevant, and Deflecting Swipe is something that you want to think about more, so I think Red Elemental Blast is a little bit better right now.
Adding to your storm count sounds like a Vintage thing, Dylan.
I think it was taken from like Legacy and Vintage, but yeah. Like it didn't matter before Deflecting Swipe. There was no other thing to tell them apart, so like that was the only thing to give to Pyroblast. You know what I mean? When like if you're not redirecting stuff, it doesn't make a difference.
Technically, Misdirection has been a card for a long time. Yeah, it just never was really seen play. I can understand how still, before Deflecting Swipe, that, you know, upping your storm count was still something that you wanted to do.
But... And I think storm was a little bit more prevalent in the early days of CDH or something, especially since it was a lot takeover from Legacy. But
there's no Thassa's Oracle, right? So like...
Yeah, so but now I think Red Elemental Blast is better. Also, it was in beta and alpha, which is cool too. So, but either of the cards I think are better than Lightning Bolt, somewhere in that like high 3.0 area, but maybe not a 4. Oh,
because they work really well in counter wars. They do really good at protecting you. They're really good at removing like mass card draw effects that are in play, like Rhystic Study and stuff like that.
I think that's their best part, is the fact that they can stop counter spells, and they can also stop Rhystic Study and Mystic Remora, and they can also counter Thassa's Oracle while it's on the stack, which is good. Now you want it to be able to do that. I think it's a very versatile card that should probably see a little bit more play. The more I think about it, I think it's probably better than Burgi and Jeskka's Will, actually, because I play these cards in almost every red deck. At least one
Whether
of them.
I'm playing both of them or one of them, like if I'm in three or more colors, I really only want one, especially if I'm in blue already. But if I'm not in blue, like this is the perfect thing to have.
Yeah, if you're not in blue, this is a 5 out of 5. If you are in blue, this is like a 4.3 or 4. So maybe we cut the difference and maybe it's somewhere on a 4.5 or 6.
I'm willing to give them a 4.5. Although I do think that their popularity is going to continue to go down just as like as we get more better interactive spells for other colors colors too. Like, if you're not in red, like, white's always getting more removal spell options. So, like, there's always going to be some more stuff that's going to be in competition with these spells. But, like, blue is, to me, always going to be the color I need to look out for the most, and always the strongest color that I think is happening in a CEDH table. And because each blue deck has at least 20 blue cards in it, there's going to be so many targets for you to have that it's totally worth having.
It's similar to some of the other, I don't want to say it's in the same vein as Final Fortune, but sometimes it can do nothing. Sometimes it can backfire. Sometimes there's no blue at your pod. That's going to suck, but that's not going to happen most often. More often than not, you're going to have a target with it, and it's going to be a decent one.
If there's no blue in your pod, you're probably not playing against great decks.
You should be winning.
So just win the game instead.
There you go.
All right, we have one final card to talk about. This is Deflecting Swat. This is 2 and a red for an instant, but it's free if you control a commander when you cast it. You can choose new targets for target spell or ability. That's what it says. You may choose new targets for target spell or ability.
If you Deflecting Swat a red elemental blast, you have to redirect it to something that is blue. Is nothing else blue that's on the stack or anything like that, you cannot do it, which
you
is why
red
blast
always
is better.
Need to change the target to a new legal target.
Whereas if it's Pyro Blast, you can redirect it to whatever. You can redirect a Pyro Blast to the Deflecting Swat, and then it'll fizzle.
You do not have to announce the new target until this resolves.
Yes.
So use it as your political tool if you want it. You may need to reveal information for someone to let your Deflecting Swat resolve, but don't just willy-nilly, as you're announcing that you're casting Deflecting Swat, just say what you want to direct the target
to. Yeah, that's huge too. If someone's abrupt decaying your Heuristic Study and you're planning on Deflecting Swat it back to their Heuristic Study, you can just say cast Deflecting Swat targeting your Abrupt Decay. You don't have to give any more information than that until they say it resolves. And then once it resolves, that's when you say, all right, it's going back to that other spell.
And then it's too late. They can't respond to the Deflecting Swat after that. They can to the Abrupt Decay, which I think are the words I took out of your mouth right there. But like after that, the Deflecting Swat's gone.
Yeah, they can still respond to the Abrupt Decay that's coming at their thing. But like Cam said, they can't respond to the Deflecting Swat. Deflecting Swat's great. It goes in most decks. Not every deck. There are some decks that aren't going to be able to get their commander out effectively enough where this is going to be free all the time. And this kind of has to be free. But it goes in a lot of decks. Oh, also one thing that I want to mention with this one is this is really good against counter spells too. If someone is countering your spell, you can redirect the counterspell to your Deflecting Swat, and then it'll just fizzle, because by the time the Deflecting Swat resolves, it's no longer on the stack, so the counterspell can target the Deflecting Swat, but the counterspell targeting your Deflecting Swat will fizzle before it does anything. So it is helpful there. It is a little bit confusing.
Let's also keep in mind too that it's also abilities. It's not just spells. So you can change a Orcish Bowmaster target that's going to your Esper Sentinel back at the Orcish Bowmaster, right? So like there's so much more utility that this card has when you first read it. And then like you see it in play and you go, oh my God, I didn't know this card could do that.
Yeah, Peer into the Abyss is another huge one. Peer sees play now, but a couple months ago, this card sees a lot of play, and Deflecting Swat was really good at redirecting that Peer into the Abyss to you, so they would lose life and you get to draw the cards.
You
really
can
good.
Redirect the Intuition target to someone else.
Yeah, redirecting Intuition doesn't really do much. They still get it, but yeah, I guess you can.
Maybe if someone else says, oh, I have a
Veil of Summer.
Yeah.
This card's like a 4.9 in the right decks.
Yeah.
In most decks, it's going to be good. There are some decks that will not play it just because you have like a 5-mana commander and you're
Name
not going to be able to get
Name
it out.
Name a deck.
Name one deck that wouldn't play Deflecting Swat.
Because honestly, dude, it's
First Sliver.
Okay.
First Sliver.
Yeah, okay. Any deck.
Any meta deck?
Any...
Name an actual meta deck that wouldn't play Deflecting
like
Swat.
Because like even,
right now.
Okay, I'll give you this. There are a lot of Kenrith lists that that don't play it. But mine does, because my Kenrith list is much more focused on trying to get Kenrith in play. Because I don't know why you don't want to have Kenrith in play if you're playing Kenrith.
When I was playing Kess a little bit more, I know a lot of Kess lists were off of Deflecting Swat and Fierce Guardianship because you don't get Kess out enough. I was also on the boat of, no, I want to go out of my way to get Kess into play, so I want the Swat to protect the Kess.
I feel like if your commander creates card advantage, why don't you want it in play? You should play towards that and put this card in your deck.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of if there is a deck that wouldn't play Deflecting Swat besides Kenrith, besides First Chain Flute Sliver, besides, like, if your commander is just an outlet, but we've kind of learned that, like, those decks are not as good. Like, your commander can't just be an outlet.
It has to be more active than just that. Yeah, which means that it's also doing something in play, which means that I kind of want this all the time.
At the same time, though, this is not the same power level as Underworld Breach and Dockside Extortionist. It's just
no.
not. It's
no,
good.
Which is
it's
why
great
I'm
interaction,
okay keeping
but...
it at a 4.9, because it is the best interactive red spell, but it's not winning you the game.
Yeah, I would say, I feel confident that this is a 4.9. I think this is very firmly the third strongest red card. Have we talked about any other? Is it the third? Right?
It is. Yeah.
I think it's very firmly the third card, but it's definitively not as good as Dockside and Underworld Breach for sure.
No, definitely not. Well, that's our list, Dylan. Do you want to hear it from bottom to top?
I would love to.
All right. So our worst card is Imperial Recruiter at 3. Then we have Rite of Flame at a 3.1. Lightning Bolt comes in at a 3.5. Then Gamble came in at a 3.6. Final Fortune got a 3.7. Wheel of Fortune just eked it out at 3.79. Simeon Spirit Guide got a 4. Ragavan Nimble Pilferer is at a 4.1. Jessica's Will got a 4.25. But Bergy, God of Storytelling, got a 4.3. Red Elemental Blast and Pyroblast got a 4.5. Deflecting Swat came in at 4.9. Underworld Breach got a perfect 5. And so did our number one red card, Dockside Extortionist.
So strange. I'm pretty sure for blue and for black, the whole top 10s were 5 out of 5s.
Yeah, and now this time, this list is basically a top 10.
I think that's pretty much right. Rite of Flame maybe should have been a little bit higher. Maybe Gamble should have also, but I think they're roughly like in the right places.
They're roughly
the
same thing. Yeah, I think so too. Like they're yeah, that's all I have to say about it.
Cool.
These are red cards. This is exactly how we thought this list would go.
These are red cards in CDH. Thank you for watching.
See you next time.
Thanks so much for watching. If you like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Kajo, Alex, Sean in the Ice, Mark Cirillo, SoCal Acura, Stormageddon, Luke Cook, Demon of Rosgrees, Peter Stewart, Uncle Butch, Kawaja A. Hamid, Lauren Connell, and Baby G-Bus.
If you like to support us, if you want to pick up any merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Humongous shout out to Dragon Shield. Thank you for supporting the show. Use code PlayToWin5 at our affiliate link down below for 5%. Just enough for your order.
Follow us on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram for more content.
Thank you for watching.
See you next time.
Boom.
This is Luca Brussel, Nicholas Balder, reactive for threes instead of ease, Tyler Watson, Brian Barrington, Zachary Colson, Tyler H, X, Tyler the Tree, X, Mulcraft, Driving Crooner, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Pote, Hobo Ghost, Mitchell Shepard, Justin Manzolo, Pedro, Jacob Depp, Michael Ballou, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Plato, and David Nelson.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast. Nope, what? That's not what I say. You say that.